can cause challenges sometimes. I think we've all had enough experience to know that that can happen from time to time. How many marriages have we seen that have fallen apart because of money issues? I recently read a quote from a lady who studies marriages. Her name is Sonia Britt, and she works for Kansas State University as a researcher. And she says, arguments about money are by far the top predictor of divorce, according to her studies. But money problems not only can break up marriages, they can break up friendships. Well, a recent online survey said that 1 in 5 Americans have lost a friend over a money dispute. That is a lot of broken relationships over something as small as money. But money does not just cause problems in marriages and friendships. Money can cause problems in churches. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. It's very interesting that in the very first church, that church in Jerusalem, the first time that we read about a major sin coming into that church, it was when they were dealing with a problem of money, when someone was giving money and there was some sin involved in that, and it ended up with a husband and wife both dead by the end of it. That very first problem revolved around money. And so tonight I want to talk about the church and money. Money can lead to all sorts of sins. It can lead to greed, it can lead to selfishness, it can lead to anxiety, it can lead to dishonesty. All sorts of sins revolve around this topic of money. And so it's critical that when we deal with it correctly. And as you see in the Bible, money is a necessary part of even the running of a church. Every Sunday morning, we come together, and one of the things we do is we give. And then that money is used for all sorts of different things in this local church. And the key is that we use it correctly, and that we collect it correctly, and that we do all these things correctly, because when we don't do it correctly, we run into all sorts of sins and all sorts of problems like we're going to talk about tonight. And so the key is we want to do it the way that the New Testament describes it being done in that very first church. The way that God showed them how to collect money and how to use money and how to deal with money, that's the way we want to be. And when we can do it God's way, it works. But when we depart a little bit from God's way, we hand Satan the keys, and he can wreak havoc on the church. So the first principle that I want to look at tonight is I want to talk about a few foundational concepts for this idea of money. The first one is that the church's purpose is not money. The church uses money, but it is not about money. And whenever the church becomes about money, then I've gone way off. Somewhere we've gotten way off base. Because as we read in the New Testament, that's not what the church is about. Turn over to Acts chapter 2. In Acts chapter 2, it's where the church first starts. And Peter gets up and he gives that great sermon. And in that chapter, at the end of his sermon, he says, verse 36, "Let all the house of Israel therefore know for certain that God has made him both Lord and Christ, this Jesus whom you crucified." And that's the conclusion of his great sermon. And then all these people are baptized and the church begins. And it begins with that statement of, Jesus is the Christ, Jesus is the Lord, you crucified him, but he's king. That's what the church was all about, was about Jesus Christ being king. It matches up with the great confession that Peter had made earlier when he told Jesus that Jesus was the Christ. And Jesus said, upon this rock I will build my church. How, right from the very beginning, the church was about Christ. And whenever we take our focus off of Christ and put it on something else, we've completely missed it. But at the same time, needs do arise in a local church, and those needs will sometimes require money. And you see that again in Acts chapter 2. Here the church has just barely started. We've had all these people converted. The church begins, and it talks about all the things they're doing, how they're teaching, how they're being with each other at different times, they're praying, all these different things that are going on. And then in verse 45, it says, "And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need." So apparently, right here at the very beginning, there were some Christians who were in need. And so the solution was, they were going to, some of the other Christians decided to sell their stuff and take that money and help out these Christians who were in need. So right there at the very beginning, there were some financial needs, and there needed to be a way to deal with those needs. And so that brings up the question, if churches have financial needs, how should we meet those needs? Well, there's all sorts of different ways we could come up with of doing that. There's all sorts of strategies I could think of with ways we could raise money and we could meet those needs, whether it be selling something or running a business or a car wash or going door to door and asking for money or whatever I could dream up. But what you find in the New Testament is there's actually only one way that's ever mentioned. And it's mentioned multiple times consistently throughout the New Testament. And that is Christians giving. The only way that we ever see them raising money as a church is by Christians giving. It's this very simple concept, but you see it consistently through the Bible. You see it in Acts chapter 4. In verse 34, it talks about how, again, we have these some Christians there that are in need. In financial need. And it says in verse 34, "There was not a needy person among them, for as many as were owners of land or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of what was sold and laid it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to each as any had need." So here, there's some needs. Okay, so people sell their property, they take that money, and then they give it to the disciples, to the apostles, and the apostles distribute that money as needed. So again, it's Christians giving. You see again later on, it says when there's a famine, it says in verse 27, "Now these days prophets came down from Jerusalem to Antioch, and one of them named Agabus stood up and foretold by the Spirit that there would be a great famine over all the world. This took place in the days of Claudius. So the disciples determined everyone according to his ability to send relief to the brothers living in Judea. And they did so, sending it to the elders by the hand of Barnabas and Saul." So here we have a similar situation. There's some Christians who are in need because there's a famine. People don't have any food. But this time, it's Christians who are off in some other location. But again, the Christians gather money and give it to those people who are in need. Once again, it's Christians giving to meet the need. And then you see that way over in Philippians. Here's a different kind of a scenario. In Philippians chapter 4, we have them giving to meet a different kind of need. This time, Paul's out there preaching, and he has financial needs when he's off preaching and teaching at different congregations. And so churches rise up to meet that need. And here you have the Philippians who do that. In verse 15 of Philippians chapter 4, it says, "And you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again." Once again, it's Christians giving to meet a need. It's a different kind of need now, but it's the exact same way of dealing with that. Christians give. So that's the foundation of what we're going to be talking about tonight. When the church is not about money, but there are needs, and the way those needs need to be met is by Christians giving to meet those needs. Well, Satan has a way of twisting just about anything you can find in the Bible. And this is one of those topics where God has so clearly laid out, here's how to take care of this situation. And yet there's so many ways that Satan has found to try to trip us up and get us stuck on these various issues. So what I want to do tonight is I want to ask this question, how do we become more like the New Testament church in this regard? What things can we do to be more like that church that we read about in the New Testament? And I want to talk about how we do our giving. I want to talk about how money's handled. I want to talk about how money's used. All these different aspects, and try to get our minds to think about, here's how they did it in the Bible. Let's do it like that. So let's start with giving. How Christians gave in the New Testament. And I want to look at that from 2 Corinthians. We're going to be looking at several passages here from 2 Corinthians. I believe that there is a great misunderstanding among Christians when it comes to giving. And I think that misunderstanding is many times Christians will look at it as though it's some kind of a command that you have to fulfill, that it's almost as though it's this checklist item that I've got to make sure I give. Okay, check that one off the list. And when you read the Bible and what it says about giving, it is so much deeper than some kind of a command that you fulfill, like checking off an item on a list. So turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. 2 Corinthians 8, because here Paul spends this whole chapter telling us about giving, and he shows us a whole new depth to this giving than just fulfilling some kind of a commandment. In this chapter, the background of this is here we have Paul has been arranging a gift that's going to go from all these Gentile Christians to some Christians over in Judea. So here are these Jews in Judea who are Christians, and they're having some kind of major financial problems. And so Paul decides to gather all these funds from various churches that are Gentile churches and take all that money and give it to these Jewish brethren. And this is a huge operation. It appears that it takes him over a year to do all of this, to talk to all these churches, write to all these churches, gather all this money, and then finally deliver it to the churches there in the Jerusalem area. And so in chapter 8, he's writing to the Corinthians about this. And he holds up some examples. He talks about the Macedonian Christians. And he holds up the Macedonian Christians who had already given to this. He holds them up as this great example of, here's what giving looks like. And then he's going to talk to the Corinthians about, now here's how you need to give. So chapter 8, let's begin reading in verse 1. We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means, of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. And this not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. Accordingly, we urge Titus that as he had started, so he should complete among you this act of grace. But as you excel in everything, in faith and speech and knowledge and all earnestness and in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. All right, so Paul begins here by talking about this model of a Christian giver. Here are the Macedonians. They stand up as this model. And he says, here's what was just remarkable about these Christians. He says, they were so eager to give. You can just imagine these Christians begging Paul, can we take part in this? We want to give too. Can you let us do this? It wasn't that Paul had to say, now guys, you need to be giving. Here, they said, we want to be giving. And then they surprised Paul with how much they gave. He says they gave to their ability and beyond their ability. They just kept giving more and more. And so here's Paul thinking, you know, these guys, they don't really have all that much money. I'm not really sure they can be giving this much. And here they just keep giving more and more. And he's thinking, how are they even doing this? How are they giving this much? And Paul's holding this up, this incredible example. And so then we wonder, well, how did they do that? What would motivate a Christian to not only give, but to beg, to say, can I take part in that? I really want to take part in that. And then to give so much more than people even thought possible. What was behind that? Well, Paul explains it. He says here, they gave themselves first. He says, that's the key here. In order to give, I need to first give myself. And that changes everything. You know, if I haven't given myself to God, then I might feel like, you know, I don't really want to give this week, or I'm not really, how much am I supposed to give? But if I've already given myself to God, then that means my whole life is God's. It's not mine anymore. I've given my whole life to God. That means my time belongs to God, my thinking belongs to God, all of my stuff belongs to God. Everything is God's now. And at that point, that's not a problem anymore. Giving is not the issue anymore. When at that point, I've already given everything to God, so whenever I have an opportunity to give, I'm going to be jumping that at that opportunity because I've already devoted myself to God. And so then Paul says, so that's the way I want you guys to be. He says, but then he says in verse 8, a very surprising thing. Verse 8, I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love also is genuine. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. Well, here's a very surprising thing. He says, I say this not as a command. Well, wait a minute. I thought giving was a command. What do you mean it's not as a command, Paul? He says, I don't want you to do this as a command. Instead, the rest of the verse he says, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love also is genuine. He says, I want you to prove that your love is genuine. Don't do it like, I got to do this because that's what's commanded. Do it to show how much you love God and how much you love these people that you're helping. Do it to prove your love. That's what real giving is, when I do it out of love for the people I'm helping and for God. And then, as if that were not enough, Paul then gives them that example there. He says, all right, here's an example of what it looks like to give. And he says, let's talk about Jesus. Here's how Jesus gave. Jesus was rich, and then he became poor. Well, how did that work? He says, let's talk about giving like Jesus gave. All right, here's Jesus up in heaven. He's got everything. And then he comes to earth and he gives up everything. So, and why would he do that? Why would anybody give up everything? Because he loved us. He did it for us. And Paul's saying, that's what giving looks like. You want to know how to give? Look at Jesus. Has everything, gives up everything so that we can become rich. He became poor so that we could become rich. Whenever I struggle with giving, whenever I reach the point where I feel like I don't really want to give or do I have to give that much, I need to go back and read about Jesus. That's what will change our hearts, is when we see the way that Jesus gave. Paul says, that's a model for how we as Christians need to give. And that's why when you get to the next chapter, when we get to that familiar verse in verse 7, chapter 9, verse 7, where he says, each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. That's why here in this next verse, he can say, you should be giving cheerfully, and you shouldn't be giving under compulsion, like somebody says, you better give. No, he says, you need to voluntarily give. And you need to do it happily. And he's not saying, okay, time to give. Everybody put on your happy face. He's saying, you need to enjoy giving. This needs to be something that gives you this great delight when you give the way Jesus gave. Well, that is a completely different mindset than just checking off a command. That's a whole different way of thinking. But the New Testament not only lays out a different way for us to think about giving, but it also lays out some instructions about how the money should be handled once it's given. Once we give our money, how should that money be taken care of? And it's in the same chapter, here in 2 Corinthians, Paul talks about the process of handling money. And here again, Satan has so many tools to wreak havoc on the church. When he can work something to where somebody's reputation is compromised, where somebody suspects somebody else of doing something they shouldn't with the money, or where somehow the money is mishandled in some way, and Satan can cause all sorts of division and things. And so Paul talks about here how he handles the money. He says here, we're in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, he talks about how once all this money's collected, they're going to need to take this money to the Christians there in Judea. And so that's going to be a challenge. How are we going to transport this large amount of money? We're talking about collecting money from multiple churches over a very long period of time. We've got this large sum of money. How are we going to get this from one location to another? They can't do some kind of bank transfer or something. They've actually got to physically carry it. And so he says he's selected some different guys. He says first he has Titus. Titus is going to be going with him to carry this money. Then he talks about another Christian who he doesn't give us the name of, but he says is well known among all the churches. And then he says there's a third Christian who he says has been tested and found earnest in many matters. So three guys, and the thing that he's trying to show with each of these guys is they have a reputation. They have this good reputation that these are people who we can trust to handle this money correctly. Well, Paul, why all the precautions? Why are you do you need to bring in three guys just to carry some money? Well, chapter 8, verse 20, he explains that. Verse 20 says, "We take this course so that no one should blame us about this generous gift that is being administered by us. For we aim at what is honorable, not only in the Lord's sight, but also in the sight of man." So here Paul's saying, I'm taking all these extra precautions so that nobody's going to blame us. Nobody's going to say, oh, I think maybe somebody pilfered a little bit of that money, or I think that money was mishandled in some way. No, we're going to have some accountability here. We're going to have some transparency where everybody can see there's three very faithful men who are all watching over this and making sure that this money is handled correctly. And the lesson for us as Christians is after we've given that money, that money needs to be handled correctly, above board, in a way that's transparent, in a way that there's accountability, that there's trust involved, where that money is handled with honesty. Well, not only does the New Testament give us instruction about handling money, but it also gives us instruction about using that money. And this is a very important one because it's another one where Satan can twist things up and he can get us using money for all sorts of things that the church in the New Testament never would have dreamed of using the money for. So let's talk about that. How should we use the money once it's given? An interesting thing about the New Testament giving is that it was very purpose-driven. That whenever you see Christians giving in the New Testament, they gave for a specific purpose. When Christians were in need, the Christians gave to meet that need. When Paul was in need, the Christians gave to meet Paul's need. It seems like they really had this purpose behind what they were giving. And the great thing is we can look at what those purposes were, and we can see here's the kinds of things we need to be using the money here for in God's kingdom. So I want to break that down. What should we be using the money for? First of all, as I went through all the different passages I could find on this, I divided it into two major categories, two ways that I see the church in the New Testament using this money. And you can do your own study on this and you go through all the passages. I think you'll see the same picture here, where one of the things you see over and over again is giving the money to needy saints, giving the money to Christians who are in need. And you see that in the passage we talked about at the beginning, where Christians sold their lands and they gave that money to the apostles and the apostles distributed that money to the Christians who were in need. We also saw that in Acts chapter 11, where there was a famine, Christians were in need, and so the Christians gave money to meet that need. But then the second thing that we see Christians giving money for is teaching the gospel. And we saw that with Paul in the book of Philippians. When we read that verse, we talked about Christians giving their money to help support Paul in preaching the gospel. And that was whatever physical needs he might have, whatever physical things were required to make that gospel message known, to be able to teach that gospel, Christians were giving to meet that. And another passage you see with this is 1 Timothy chapter 5. This one is a little different, but again, it boils down to teaching the gospel. Here, this is for supporting an elder. Here's an elder who's working with a local church, and Paul talks about using money to actually help support that elder. He says in chapter 5, verse 17, "Let the elders who rule well be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in preaching and teaching." Now, honor here in this chapter, as you read through it, you find out the word honor, Paul's using that to refer to money. So here, it's right in some cases to even to pay the elders as well for the work of this preaching and teaching. So once again, it's for this work of spreading the gospel. And so those are the two major categories that you see. That's where the church's focus was, and that's where their focus was financially here. And so we, as Christians today, we as a church today, that needs to be our focus when it comes to financial things. When we get ourselves off of that focus and we get ourselves on all sorts of other things, we've missed it. We need to be focused on these kinds of areas for how we use the money that's collected. Now, someone might say, well, wait a minute. You know, those are two examples that are listed, but surely there's other things that the church could be using it for too. Those are just two examples. Why couldn't we do a lot of other things? And before we jump onto that and start using the money for a lot of other things, it's important to realize that Paul also talks about restrictions, that the Bible actually also sets up special restrictions on how the money was used in the New Testament. God did not leave this wide open door with everything you can dream up. There were certain instances where he said, no, the money should not be used for that. And I want to look at that. 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5, we see a very specific restriction of here's how you should not use the church's money. Verse 3 says, 1 Timothy 5, verse 3, honor widows who are truly widows. Okay, here again, honor is referring to money. So here he's saying, if there's a widow who's truly a widow, then you can financially support that person. And here it goes once again to helping needy Christians. Here's a widow who's in need. Christians should give to meet that need, and we should help them out. But then the next verse, here's the restriction. Verse 4, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show godliness to their own household and to make some return to their parents, for this is pleasing in the sight of God. So here he says, but don't help certain widows. Well, that's weird. Why would you not help widows? He says, don't help the widows if there's children who could be helping their parents instead. So that's a much better situation. That's the way I want it to be done. When there's children, they need to help the parents instead of the church being burdened with that responsibility. Don't let the church do that. And so here he's setting up this dichotomy. He's saying, here's an individual responsibility. Individuals are commanded to help their parents. That's a command directly to individuals that you see all the way back into the Old Testament that's honoring the parents. But then he says there's also a group responsibility of the church is supposed to help people as well, but they're not the same people. He says there's a difference here between the individual responsibility and the group responsibility. And if we understand that passage, that has huge ramifications. If there's really a difference between the individual's responsibility financially and the group's responsibility financially, then that means there's a lot of things that the group, collective, shouldn't be doing with the money. And there's all sorts of things that we individually could do. There's people I could help. There's charities I could give to. There's family members I could give to. All sorts of things I could think of that would be good things to do, and in many cases, we're commanded to do. In many cases, we could find specific commands that we should be helping that person or doing this work or whatever with our money. But then we read this and find out, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what the church collective should be doing with its money, because there is a distinction and a difference between the group and the individual. And that's important for us to understand so that we can use the money for the correct reasons. Well, not only is it important that we use the money for the correct reasons, but it's also, once we do that, once we give the right kind of way, once we handle that money in the right kind of way, once we use that money in the right kind of way, here's the great part. There is a blessing. And I want to close with this part. There is a blessing that comes when we do it God's way. When we follow the way it's written in the New Testament, there is a wonderful blessing that will come about. And we can see this if we go back to 2 Corinthians once again. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, where Paul's talking about giving, he talks about the blessing that comes to those who give, and even beyond that as well. He says here in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 6, the point is this: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work. So here's this sowing and reaping concept. He says, when we give, it's going to result in more, in opportunities, abilities to give more. Now let's dissect that and see how we get that. So here he's saying, he lays out this situation with sowing and reaping. When you plant, if you only plant a little bit, you're only going to reap a little bit. You're only going to get a little bit of a harvest. But if you plant a lot, you're going to get a huge harvest. And he says it's the same way with giving. When you give a lot, you get a lot. Well, now hold on. Let's see what he means by that. He says here, when we give, the way he explains it is, each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work. So here he says, the harvest that you're reaping is this good works. When you give a lot, God allows you to do even more. And that's why these people who were giving beyond their ability, he's saying, when you give and you give and you give, God allows you to give and give and give. He allows you to do so much more. The more we do, the more he helps us to do. And that's one of the blessings of when we give the way that God has commanded us to. But then also, he talks about the fellowship that we receive. And here we see that in 2 Corinthians as well. Here Paul has arranged this huge giving that all these Christians, all these Gentile Christians are going to be giving to all of these Christians, all of these Jewish Christians. Now there was a bit of a divide there, that here you had the Jews didn't always like the Gentiles and the Gentiles didn't always like the Jews. But here Paul has arranged this whole thing to where the Gentiles are going to be giving to the Jews. And because of that, he can foresee the wonderful blessing that's going to come from that interaction. He says in verse 13, by their approval of this service, they will glorify God because of your submission that comes from your confession of the gospel of Christ and the generosity of your contribution for them and for all others, while they long for you and pray for you because of the surpassing grace of God upon you. So here he's saying, you're going to be giving them all this to them, and they're going to be praising God because of that. And then they're going to be praying for you. So here you have this connection now. You're helping them financially. They're praying for you. All of this connection, even though they were separated by huge amounts of distance, there was now this fellowship and this connection when Christians gave to help each other. And that should be for us as well. When we give, that should draw us closer together. When we help another Christian, that should draw us closer together. When we work together to help someone, that should draw us all closer together. Giving will generate that fellowship. But finally, giving will result in God's praise. And you see that very plainly here in this chapter. All the times that Paul keeps praising God throughout this whole chapter as he talks about giving. And I want to end with this verse. He says in verse 11, you will be enriched in every way to be generous in every way, which through us will produce thanksgiving to God. That is great. That here, when we do it God's way, when we give the way that God has laid out here in the New Testament, it's going to result in this thanksgiving to God. That is going to be one of the wonderful blessings of doing it God's way. And so my hope and prayer is that we can all do it the way that God has instructed us to do it, that we can give and we can handle the money and we can use the money in the way that God has written out in His Word. And when we do that, it is a beautiful picture. It accomplishes great good and it accomplishes God's purposes. Well, as we talked about, the greatest example of giving ever was the way that Christ gave. The way that even though he was rich, he became poor so that he could make us spiritually rich. And if you have not had that wonderful blessing yet, then we invite you to become a Christian so that you can receive that wonderful spiritual riches that Christ has given us through his giving. If you're subject to that invitation, please come forward as we stand and sing.